Everybody, it's Derek Hart, founder and chairman of CSA, your host today for the CSA online session. We've got a great opportunity today to more or less have sort of a fireside chat. We didn't call it that, but that's what it's going to be with two great individuals I'll introduce here in a few seconds, Chris Blask and Patrick Miller, both of who have spoken for us before and are CSA fellows. We had a third one, John Cusimano, who at the last minute could not do it. He sends his regrets to everybody as he really wanted to be here as well. So we'll go ahead and get going here while people are coming in. And so if you've not been with us before, we are CSA or CS2AI, as some people also call it, is a nonprofit. We're a 501c6 workforce development association. And we really have a couple of goals. The primary one is recruit more people to the cybersecurity workforce that's working on control systems, whether that be self-styled industry 4.0 or control systems or operating technology, but all those systems that have pumps and valves and actuators and cyber to physical elements, elements that make them distinctive from IT or traditional IT systems and IT cybersecurity. We want to recruit more people to that workforce. We also want to support, professionally support people at all levels of that workforce. And so that is what we, the reason we exist and what we are working on doing. We have grown, we're now 8 years old. It was just really started as a meeting where I happen to live in Atlanta, Georgia, and grew from there to chapter meetings in different cities. Those chapters are starting to meet again. That's, pre-COVID was going on in quite a few different cities. And that's starting to happen again, which we're excited to see. Then you can see here, we've just had a steady growth. And what this has told us, and what certainly our polling and surveying has told us in addition, is that the problem is global in every way. There are nuances locally, and our government approaches are different, regulatory approaches can be different, but the problem and people who care about solving it, they are everywhere and often facing the same issues and the same problems. And so if we can build more connections and more bridges between all of us, help each other, a rising tide lifts all boats, so to speak, that's also part of our mission. And it's obviously something we need to do. And a lot of us, I think, are passionate about what can we do to help each other. All right, so we're going to do a quick poll as people are coming in. And so this is part of our ongoing research is to always gather information. Today, the talk is stemming from things that were discussed at S4. And I'll tee that up a little bit later, right when the speakers come on. But I am curious, we are curious, who attended. It's a great conference, and obviously it'll come up in context during discussion today. And this really is not so much about S4 as it is the topics that came there, topics of interest to many of us and to individuals who have been long in the industry who have a lot to say about what they heard there and obviously give it context of their overall career. So we'll just get a sense here of people that, that might have come from. We wanted to understand, especially people who might never have heard of it since we're referencing it. All right. I'll give that another. So, wow, a lot of you voted, almost all of you. So I will close that out and share that. Well, there we go. So that's really interesting. 43% not familiar with it. I'm not surprised. I know many in our audience come from not from the traditional cybersecurity for OT workforce. You're entering it or are an engineer and you're looking to add this to your knowledge set. And so that's cool. And this conference has been around for a long time, but it has been very specific and has a quite a loyal following to it. A lot of great discussions to be had there. Okay, so let me keep moving here so we can get to the good stuff. We are, a large portion of the funding for our nonprofit organization comes from our sponsoring partners. And so we just want to thank them always when we can. If you work at one of these companies, thank you and thank your company for supporting our efforts. If your company's not involved, there's now a bunch of different ways to get involved. And benefit everybody. We're always looking for sort of all-win situations where our community, those of you like are coming today, benefit, and our association gets more support so we can grow our team. And also, we want to help our partners achieve their missions too. So there's lots of things to plug into today. There also is a global membership, and it has benefits. I'm not going to go into great detail today, but there are long-standing benefits and then emerging benefits that we will be adding. And we're going to have our first global member-only event. It's a training event. We're paying the trainer, and it'll be open only to our global members. And so we're really just trying to add so much to that concept, to $129 a year to make it a no-brainer for everybody. A lot of companies reimburse it. It is a source of financial support for us, so we do encourage people to do it. It also gives you access to the entire on-demand library of every recording we have going back to 2018. It's a treasure trove of amazing speakers like today, but it's covering a huge variety. Whoops, I got a little lag there. Huge variety of topics. Today you're attending the seminar format, which is 90 minutes, and we will issue CEU units to those of you that are active for at least an hour. The software does go to webinar software does tell us that. So please pay attention to that. We occasionally get the request for someone who popped in and popped out in 5 minutes. We do not issue units for those quick attendance, let's say. So stay, be involved, ask questions, and we'll be glad to send that to you. Also, we have on-demand CEUs now available for some of the videos going back to 2018. I think we're up to about 40. And these you can do self-serve 24/7 if you're a global member. It's another benefit of our global membership, and you can get your certificate sent to you. You know, so if you're backed up and you need to turn them in by a certain date and you don't have them, you can go get 5, 6, 7, many hours, probably 40 to 50 hours of certificates can be done on your own at your own pace at the last minute or late at night or whenever you need to. We are at nearing the end of the annual survey for our annual report that we do with KPMG and Waterfall and Fortinet. And so we're giving away some great prizes. We've been enabled to do that by some of our partners. And so it is the taking part of the survey is not shared with any partners. It is treated, in an anonymous way, unless you give us an email at the end that you want to be in the survey or you want to be in the prize pool. We don't even know who you are. And we're not interested in correlating data to people. We're just interested in learning from all of you in the field as much as we possibly can. And then turn that back around to it with a free report that everybody can use and can benefit from. And so that is, you can download 2 years' reports. This is going to be the ending of the survey that will become the third report this year. And so, again, we are all very close, a few days away from the end of this year's survey. So if you take it, you can get entered in some prizes. Oh, yeah, here's some of the prizes that we're giving away. So gift cards, and then we'll also get some points in our sort of point system we're working on for later in the year. I'm going to fly through some of these things so we can get to what's important. Check out the podcast if you haven't already. It is reaching new records every month on downloads. Both of the gentlemen speaking today, their biographies in there. It's sort of the as one person said, the biography channel of OT Cyber. We're up to about 70 episodes, and it's people's most of the episodes, other than I think three, are people's personal journeys. And they're fun, they're interesting, they're stimulating. I've heard everything in feedback from people in the field at all levels. And so check it out and let me know what you think. And it is sponsored by the Waterfall Industrial Podcast. So it's interesting that their podcast is the sponsor this year. And a few other companies will probably be joining them as sponsors of the podcast series itself. If you want to get involved, we have a great working committee that we've templated everything on. We're going to form other committees of members working for members. Just get on the list by sending something to get involved at cca.org. We will get out and get reach out to you, and we'll get another committee going probably pretty soon on another topic that we can all benefit from. So winding up my part, we will be giving away prizes today for quality questions. So these are questions you asked today for our speakers to comment on. And everybody benefits from that. And that's why we give away some reward for that and want to make it fun. But everybody does benefit from the Q&A and from the dialogue and discussion. We can't all be in the same room together, but that's sort of what we're trying to simulate there is a conversation. So if you enter other questions, our whole team is on and we'll try to answer those customer service questions. Absolutely get those in there too. Everybody's here. We'll try to get them answered. But this is about asking questions for the topic and for the subject matter area. For the speakers today, that's what gets you entered in the prize wheel that we'll spin later. Okay, so this is speakers are welcome to come on. This event was stimulated by a blog article that Patrick wrote right after the event. So Chris and Patrick have been to many S4s, so many that they've lost count. But at the end, Patrick wrote sort of a trip report, and highlighted things. And so you can find it. This QR code, take it to his blog. But we thought it was a really nice sort of summary of all kinds of things that got talked about and discussed. And so we said, why not invite, Patrick and Chris, and obviously we had a third person to come talk about the thoughts they had coming away from it. And, maybe the good, bad, and maybe a little bit of the good, bad, and the ugly. But the truth is, there was a lot of good. And these guys can bring not only the context of having been there, but then also longstanding careers in the space context heavily reinforced context earned over a long time period. So with no further ado, I would like to welcome Chris and Patrick. They're both going to do some opening comments, but go ahead and get Q&A in now at any time during this, and we'll try to address that as we go. So, gentlemen, please have at it.
Okay, Chris. I was going to ask your Alexa some questions just because it was going to be a trick, but I've already done that earlier in the pre-room, the green room. But I can say Chris Sistrunk specifically requested this. But yeah, thanks, Derek. Thanks for having us on. I guess I'll start. Really honored to be here, and it's great to have conversations with my friends. But at the same time, kind of talking about some of these topics that were raised at S4, and they're really, you know, not unique to S4. These are topics that are important for the entire industrial security community and the OT security community. So looking forward to having some conversations about it.
And just to mirror that, you know, Derek, you said, earned. You know, I was thinking the word suffered might have also been how we got here. But it has been a long, wild, crazy trip. I think the topic at hand today, reviewing S4, which is another instance of, as you described in your intro, what this group is about. Dale and other people tried to say, hey, can we all get together and talk? And we're still talking and going through phases. And I think what Patrick and I have to discuss today are a lot of interesting aspects of phases that we're going through right now that might be worth thinking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked in the green room about the evolution, and you guys go even, you know, further back than I do. You've seen a lot, and we are evolving. And I thought it was interesting. We talked about things that might have been okay, you know, certain kinds of conversation or flavors of conversation that maybe are less useful today. You know, there's an evolution at all levels, right? Technology certainly has evolved. Team, the people who have specialty and knowledge in the area has evolved, regulations have evolved. There's no aspect that hasn't evolved, but the human being part of it is of keen interest to me, and I know it is to both of you as well. That's at the heart of all this, right? Is the team and the humans trying to solve these things. If context-wise, if you haven't, S4 is one of the longest standing cybersecurity for control systems or OT/ICS focused conferences. It's held every year. Dale Peterson is the MC, creator, founder, and also longstanding contributor to this space. And so it's just evolved. And today, this year was the biggest yet by far. And so not here to sell that event. I just am a fan. We don't have a formal relationship other than them just appreciate what goes on there. And it's one of my don't want to miss events each year, which I know is similar for Chris and Patrick. So guys, wherever you want to go, let's go, and then we'll see what kind of Q&A comes in, and I'll sort of bring that up as part of the flow.
I kind of wanted to pick up on that thread right there with the, and not necessarily a plug for S4, but a plug for going to conferences. Go to conferences. Find a way to get there. If you're a student, sometimes there's a student discount. Sometimes just letting them know, especially if you're an asset owner, letting them know that you really want to go, but your budget are strapped. They can often find ways to assist, submit a paper, submit a talk, even if you're new. We love getting new people and new ideas into this. So don't feel like just because you're new that you can't have a talk at a conference. I'm on some CFP panels for different conferences, and I see the same names all the time. I want to see new faces. So that an easy way to get to the event is submit the paper, right? Maybe you can be the presenter. But by all means, getting there in person, whether it's S4 or whatever, find a way to do this because this is tremendously valuable, not just for you learning new things, but for improving your network and honestly your soft skills, all of those things. It just attending events is hugely valuable for your career.
And I'm glad you went there as well, because I see the same thing in working groups where you get 100 of the best people in the room and 5 of them talk. Right. Yes. And I chair one of these at the moment, and I'm trying to, get people out on it. And I want to, mention the flip side. You'll notice that everybody up on screen here is let's say it old, right? And I have 20 something kids now, not 20 something, 20 something kids. Let me be clear about that. And and I understand, that I'm not going to communicate the way they do, right? And I think about this an awful lot. And you're right, Patrick. There's no replacement for the value of an in-person conference. It just isn't. I don't think there ever will be. Mm-hmm. However, there's means and methods being used today by the 20-something crowd and the 30-something crowd that us, 50-something and so don't really understand. And that, you know, we need your help in understanding how to use these things. So we can get a lot of the value of a, of these interpersonal things without this one way sort of thing we're doing now, or these, you know, Zoom calls. You know, I believe strongly that, that there's a technology out there being used today that if the quote unquote decision makers and management layer as old folks understood, would help us advance all of this on every front.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I actually raised in my S4 trip report. And Derek, you mentioned it's the biggest one that's happened. There was, you know, 1,100 plus people, which
six or seven, just a year ago.
Some of the early events that I've been to, because I've been in OT, gosh, since the 80s. So, yeah, we're old. You're right, Chris. But that was one of the things I noticed when I was giving away the Community Builder Award for Beer ISAC, and I was up on stage. It was the last thing. So there was most of the audience was in the room. So I asked everyone, show of hands, who's new? And like almost half the audience raised their hand. It was really surprising to see like nearly 50%. And when I looked at the hands that were up, they were all easily under 40. They were all in their 20s and 30s. And to me, I mean, I had this like immediate sensation of this room is full of my replacements and I love it.
It's all right. Good. Yeah. Well, let's dive into some of the findings. And everybody who's attending today, you can ask Chris and Patrick something that's not something they brought up right now. Are very deeply knowledgeable about the space. And so if there's something you want to ask in the space, get it on the question. If I can get to it, I will. You can ask it now. We'll try to stick to stuff that they're talking about, but we may have time to ask something else. Obviously, OT cyber related, but it doesn't have to be something they brought up. So what maybe each of you could talk about sort of some of your top walkaways you thought from the presentations and discussions there.
Well, you know, so, you know, we're talking about S4 itself and the evolution of things and so forth. And it's been obviously an interesting, say, 4 or 5 years, right? And for this particular event, right? And I should have thought of this before this this recording. I can't remember exactly the one right before, you know, the world changed and the pandemic hit and so forth. But there was in the middle, there was the S4 last year, you know, that, you know, I went and, you know, went to that one. It was one of the first things in post this. And now there was this year, or I guess last year, now this one, as you say, it was a big, huge event and shows a lot of things we'll talk about. And the, you know, the topics last year in my, especially at the moment, is supply chain, right? You know, or, you know, prime thing I'm thinking about. But last year it was an understood sort of thing. This year was a big thing. I think for the standard, you know, what is a takeaway from this annual event sort of thing, supply chain and software bill of materials is a given now. You know, a year ago, it was probably a thing that people are really talking about. This year was the main thing going on, the main talks and so forth.
In addition to it being, let me put it a different way, I think it's mainstream. It's now mainstream. And it's even so mainstream that we're looking for ways. It's so mainstream, it's not fragmented, but it's matured into different refinement points as well, because there was some discussion of not just like SBOM, which, of course, a few years ago, SBOM, when people like, what the hell is that? But now SBOM is mainstream. And now we're looking at things like SBOB, which is the Software Bill of Behaviors. So we're now riffing on what is kind of a given, which is, okay, SBOMs, you need SBOM. What is it? It's not what is it? It's, we know what it is. And now we're adding to that in unique and creative ways.
Right. And like we're talking about in the green room, right? You know, this is, it's interesting, you know, in 2020, one small group of us, I felt like saying out loud, I think this is the last decade of cybersecurity, right? Because it's a good way to, you know, start an argument and so forth. But an interesting one. And I think the couple of years in between, and as we're talking about right now, this year, this S4 going on right now, it's, you know, everything's getting to levels of maturity where it's as expected. Look, if you're not on something right at the beginning, lots of people are, and lots of those things never go anywhere. And they're really cool and so forth, but it doesn't take over the world. But the internet, firewalls, connecting the grid to everything else, you know, not having an air gap, having cloud OT, right? A lot of these things are inevitabilities that literally touch the entire world. And one of the things the early groups, and OT cybersecurity is one of these still at this point, needs to understand that as it gets to a certain point, it accelerates. All of a sudden, you know, that 80% of the community is now 8%. Yeah. Right. You know, so making that transition and adding, you know, to some of the topics we're touched on already, the nuance, the sophistication, how would you actually do this if there were 8 billion people involved instead of 8,000?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we're going on a lot of levels now.
I want to interject a question that somebody's just asked that's related to this. And I was drawn into some conversation. There's old guard who are like, this thing got too big, you know, 1,000. It's funny. Those are those RSA. We think about a 1,000 person conference and we say, what's a 50,000 person conference feel like? But there are nuances, or not even nuances. There are pluses and minuses to size. And so somebody asked just now, they directed this to you, Patrick, but how big is too big for a conference like this? It seemed like there were challenges even getting the fantastic Beer ISAC to meet all at once. And we talked a lot about Beer ISAC leading up to S4, and you're right. It's, you know, he's right. It's challenging.
It is. I don't know if there is too big. Because we need more people doing this job. There's more work than there is people right now. So from a logistics standpoint and like an event location standpoint and your ability to see everybody and make it to all the stuff, sure, that's a challenge. But man, what an awesome problem that would be. I would love to have that problem. So yeah, there really is no end on the scale. I mean, until we've actually solved the problem. And then, great, we're done. We can go have a beer and say, you know, ring the bell. But we're not there yet. And 1,100 people at this event is pretty big for our world, but it's still nowhere near what we need in terms of, I mean, Derek, you got 27,000 members. Even that is not enough. You need to like add some zeros to the end of that to get all of these problems solved. So I don't think
let's touch on that, because that touches on something that I've been drawn into before. They're like, well, how big do you think this community, you know, looking at sort of how many people have signed up with us? I said, well, the people who should have a dotted line to care to some aspect about this is an enormous number. We're not trying or advocating about building cyber ninjas, everyone, you know, all of you attending every one of these events, you know, and everyone in our 27,000 needs to be a complete expert in cybersecurity and control systems. Not true. But not you need that cyber knowledge of the average person touching industrial networks in any way. Does even the smallest touching those networks could have some awareness and knowledge, and you know, and that'd be great, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's trying to find the best way to say this, but it's, we say OT, we say ICS. At some point, this is just T. It's not IT, it's not OT. As we go forward, what looks like OT today is looking more and more like IT. So we're just technologizing all the things anyway. Everything will have a sensor, everything will have a chip, everything will be digital, and it'll just be commodity level tech used in an OT position or an IT position. So, you know, in the future, we need all the people to do these things, and you just need to be aware of how technology is doing, what is changing, so that you can go along with it. So there will always be technology in our lives going forward forever as far as the humans exist. So we don't have enough people to make this work in the best way possible. We're just not there yet. So,
well, I want to go back to the attendees question. You know, the exciting answer is we don't know. You know, how big is too big in an event?
Let's find out.
what I said earlier, right? The world is changing whether you like it or not, right? You know, and you know what we need to understand is that what we, I think, have been right about on the internet, in international shipping, you know, the packetization of things, you know, we don't need to, you know, one interesting thing for me in the last couple of months, on New Year's Eve, I spent with my 20-something kids, and they're watching a streamer based out of Montreal with a guest in Texas that just over the last 2 years has made a living out of this, you know, and there's 2,000 people logged into this New Year's Eve party. And, it, you know, there's virtual space and interesting sort of things, and it's, you know, very Second City TV and, you know, a cross between that and Space Goes Coast to Coast, right? And I'm asking that question, you know, how they're using this and thinking about this, you know, ironically, 2,000 people is about right for a big New Year's Eve party, you know, a big party, right? With enough, you know, stirring on going on. So I think there's sort of standard sizes, you know, to call out my favorite events, you know, there's groups, this group particularly, which is itself a federated sort of thing, is a great model in itself, I think, of where things are going. S4, as we're talking about here, RSA, which I've been attending for a long time now, getting that physical space, getting tens of thousands of people and just surfing that causes certain emergent properties, right?
Yeah.
But next year and 3 years and 7 years and 10 years from now, how does this all work together? I think it's a combination of the virtual that hasn't worked out so well. Like over the pandemic, we all sort of thought that, oh, we're going to all use virtual spaces. Turned out instead, we're going to stare at Zoom cameras, right, for hours at a time, which is not the same. But I think that's going to change. And then the value of this human, what we're doing now at greater scales, more often, among more people, among fewer people, right? How do we do it? We don't know.
Here's another question for you. Are discussions of wireless security growing or declining at the conference? Is there a session or set of sessions dedicated to wireless yet?
Not that I particularly recall. You know, it's a different topic, but I touched on this already. But I think the most striking thing, not so much at S4, but in the last year, from my perspective, cloud OT has become suddenly acceptable. And, you know, one of my favorite little things in the last several years was that 25-year plan that Fred Cohen and I wrote for, you know, through Unisys for the EPM, the Colombian National Grid Operator, and 7 years and 15 years thinking this through. And at the time, I said, 7 years from now, cloud OT stuff, we need to be thinking about it. And I actually got the EPM and the local Microsoft team to sit down and talk OT cloud. And it was just such a classic thing. It's like, you know, the two sides, like, you know, classic OT, IT, whatever, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to take my national infrastructure and put it in your cloud that's based where, by the way? Yeah, when hell freezes over. However, you talk to anybody, you know, that I know these days, and everybody accepts you're going to have a cloud-managed PLCs. Right. So put aside the, you know, pros and cons of all that, assuming that's the way it's going to be. Can we engineer that? I think we can. But it's an interesting evolutionary point.
It is. I don't see a lot on like wireless at a lot of the OT conferences. Sometimes there's things on like, you know, Zigbee, and there's even some CAN bus wireless stuff that I've seen, but it's not a particular focus area. It's the occasional thing that I've seen.
I think it's kind of matured, but I think it's kind of matured in, right? You know, because there was, it used to be a lot more wireless things. Now it's sort of the fabric of other conversations.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, especially with industrial IoT that's going into places now, a lot of that is assumed to be wireless because it's just so much cheaper, especially if you're in like a legacy plant. You know, I've seen plants that are, you know, they were made in the 50s and they've got asbestos, and you want to poke a hole in something, you're talking about a hazmat crew. So they just put wireless in. Screw it.
Well, you Nesco, Nescor, what, that 10 years ago, you have Zigbee, yeah. And you have wireless smart meters. You know, that was a huge, not just among the technical community, in the common media, right, where it's going to brainwave control your whatever from the smart meter.
And if you're asking a question and we don't answer the maybe what you were hoping we were going to get to, feel free to ask a clarifying question and I'll bring it up again. And if you're listening, I know we have full stack. We've got experts that are that attend, their peers to Chris and Patrick, but we've also got people at the beginning of their knowledge gathering. When they mention Zigbee or Z-Wave, Modbus, these are protocols. These are the unique communication protocols between certain kinds of manufacturers' devices. And there's hundreds of them. If you count slightly modified versions of them, I don't know how many there are. There's a lot. But if you Google that, you'll find that there's a bunch of different acronyms and names for proprietary communication protocols between these devices. That's what they're referencing.
And if you're new in this as well, I recommend making up acronyms and using them in a hostile fashion, right? You know, and when people try to throw too many at you, just make them stop and go, what does that mean? Yeah.
Here's one for you guys. Among all IT and OT cybersecurity professionals, what would be the ratio of OT cybersecurity real professionals, meaning not the wannabes? Is that 3 or 5%?
Right. You know, terminology and taxonomies end up being really, really important. You know, the words we use and how we use them, you know, in combinations, much less individual words, right? But engineer, you know, I always love this one. You know, I'm a security engineer. Now, if I'm a metal mining engineer, then I am a engineer. Actually engineering skills that are not just trained in my career, but have been developing for thousands of years, right? You know, computer engineering is a different thing. I think we use that term very loosely.
I've heard that the workforce is aging, Chris, but I didn't think we had anybody that had been doing it for 1,000 years.
Well, yeah, I love, you know, again, you guys know how much I like, it all matters where you are in time, mostly, right? And we have to understand that we're not on a 40-year, you know, it's not cyber, you know, since the internet started. This all has been developing for thousands of years. And the lovely thing about OT, and to the attendees' question, you know, what I love, I've always loved about OT is you have people who actually, they're performing tasks in engineering in a fashion that has literally been developing, not just for centuries, but for thousands of years. Water systems go back, you know, there's technical water systems, you know, at least 6,000 years old, where people stop and they said, I have to not die. I have to engineer this damn thing so it always works, right? That's engineering, right?
In fact, I don't know if you guys ever read it. It was a long time ago. The late Mike Asante wrote an article on Roman aqueducts as critical infrastructure. This is a long time ago.
It's an excellent, excellent piece.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. I mean, he and I went to college together, and we, you know, we were history and poli sci, and we, that kind of stuff was the kind of stuff we talked about many, many eons ago. So it was sort of cool. Later, he's like, I want to write a thing on the Roman aqueducts. They were critical infrastructure, and they were pretty sophisticated for sure. And if you disrupted them, you could really mess with society or have a political advantage or a warfare advantage. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of parallels to those sorts of things. And I think back to my comments earlier. We don't need everybody to be, again, the top 5% might be these true, super knowledgeable OT control system cybersecurity folks. But I've been to all kinds of gatherings, but I think in certain, I've wandered into CSA chapter meetings in different cities. And I remember, you know, 5 years ago, a woman walking to the Houston meeting who was a chemical engineer. And she said, I've just suddenly gotten tagged to know something about cyber. She clearly was an engineer. An engineer's an engineer, to your point. And but she suddenly now has this responsibility to get smart for her chemical plant on this topic. And she was, you know, she had some apprehension about that. But people around the room all came out of the woodwork to help her. People from Chevron and Shell and, you know, unrelated companies said, oh, let me help you. Here's my card. You know, not people who were selling her stuff, people, other working professionals who were ahead in their maturity curve. And so I love that. But that's what we're looking for, is just get the knowledge you need. You may not need true expertise, or you certainly may not need expertise across the full spectrum, but you may need some pieces of the puzzle because you're going to play a part. And it's a puzzle. It's a mosaic at any company.
Well, I do want to touch on the concept of the wannabes. It's everybody is on a certain path in terms of how much knowledge they have on the systems that they work with. And it's going to be different for everybody. There are going to be those that know almost everything, and there are going to be some that are just getting started. So I think that there really isn't a wannabe in that space with respect to people that are still on their path in terms of where they're learning and where they want to be, because they may have different needs and they may have different desires. So that said, the other part is, if you're misrepresenting your capabilities and your knowledge, that's irresponsible and shame on you. So yes. If that's the kind of person you're talking about, well, they're out there, but avoid them and don't be them.
Well, you know, and I want to put what I just said and what you just said together, right? You know, so the nice thing about OT, right? You have stable processes that have worked, not, you know, in cyber, we're literally making up so much stuff in this ever changing world and so forth. We think what rules apply and whatnot. You know, the guilds are about OT. The fact that guilds exist, the fact that there are standards in society, you know, come down to, you know, builders and others, you know, saying we have to all agree on the limit. We, you know, if a new king comes and tells us to build a 1,000-foot tower, we have to be able to say no, because it will fall down. And we had to all stick together and have some rational capabilities. So this, and I think, Patrick, you put it well, you know, the rational thing about engineering is, here's the materials and the landscape. And with human engineering, you know, with the engineering of people and ideas and workforces and so forth, how do we work together? It is what it is. You know, so I honestly don't see wannabes, right? Yeah, I see people with characteristics, you know, some, we were discussing this earlier, you know, and it's the lesson, I think, for anybody, but, you know, the young folks out there, if you get involved with something early, don't think that's the answer, right? You know, this is going to go on your whole life, your whole career. If you're right, it'll expand in this huge group, and those are different skill sets, right? And where we are now with OT security, if somebody wants to be, hallelujah. Now, are they, to the nature of your question, are they self-aggrandizing? Oh, you know, Patrick, are they overstating? Are they implicitly or explicitly overstating their capabilities? Implicitly, I can live with that, right? You know, if they're overeager, you know, explicitly, they're lying. You can't have that, right?
Yes, it's irresponsible.
Yeah.
It's a good point. Be authentic.
Yes.
And if you're authentically, look, a lot of people who are authentically very useful are have a lot of self-interest and ego. You know, look at us. You know, there's ego all over the place. You know, the thing, so that these levels of maturity, again, what I mean about engineers, if you want to engineer a system that's going to last centuries, you have to assume that people with big egos and so forth are going to be involved. You know, that can't be your failure state, right? You know, in fact, leverage them. Put them in roles where they can get all the credit and they'll work 40 hours a day. Perfect.
Yeah. But let me just add a little bit there. It's okay to not know the answer. And that needs to be normalized. There is zero chance that you will know everything. It's just
none
not
of
possible.
Us do.
It's not possible. Like,
yeah, so for the 5%.
Yeah, it's okay to say you don't know. And that's fine. And it's okay to say, I don't know, but I'll go get the answer and I will research it and come back with something useful. That's fine. Just don't, you know, yeah.
It's not just fine, it's expected. Right now, I touch on, you know, something you said, Derek. And again, we all say it these ways. And again, you know, to the generational thing, we don't have a way to say it differently. The top 5%. There is no such thing. There is no top 5%. Now, I don't know any of this. Right, really, you know, if I was left to my own devices and had to literally put all this stuff together myself, I can't make it work. You know, nobody can. Yeah, so it's
good point.
We have to get past the idea that, you know, there's some pinnacle of this is a system we're all part of. You know, if you have decades of experience, you have a different set of skills. That's lovely, but you don't have the answers. You know, nobody does.
And it's rapidly developing. So a person having complete knowledge about all the areas can't happen. Right, it's moving away from any one individual.
Right. It's going the opposite direction. And to that same thread, make your network, because there's a lot of things that I don't know, but I know people who do, and I go talk to them and get good answers.
Yeah. And that's a great example. And that's just maybe sort of walkaway value. I'm always thinking about things we can share. You know, I sent an email today to a small number of people. It wasn't OT related, but I got a call from somebody in great need, and it's not in my area of expertise. And so I just grabbed some emails and I blind copied them. And I said, here, you know, I forwarded the emails that I've got a friend in some, you know, some risk, and they don't know what to do. And I don't know what to advise them, but maybe one of you does. You know, you utilize your network, build your network if you don't have one, and then utilize it. But yeah, there's so much knowledge one degree away from, you know, from each of us. And I'm incredibly amazed at how open this industry is. So if you're, if you haven't tapped into it yet and you don't know this to be true, reaching out to people, even people like, oh, that person probably wouldn't answer me. You'll be surprised how many people will, in fact, answer you and try to help you to the best of their ability and their time frame allowed. So I think some forgiveness for people's busyness, but most people, many people in this industry at all levels are willing to be helpful.
Yeah.
Right, you know, and it's kind of amazing. It's one of the, you know, trying to stay inside our topic here. You know, the S4 of this year is another example of where we are, right? The maturity levels and, you know, some of us, the age levels where the expertise, you know, still nobody's retired out of this industry, really, you know, who started in it young. It's just still that young. But one of the fantastic things that you've done, Derek, and everybody with CSA and with S4 and CyberSend and RSA, despite, you know, pros and cons of everything, is you have to understand any of these people respond, any of them. Because we have this brain trust right now with people sort of my age and up who've been doing this, you know, some of them, you know, many years longer than I have, who are underutilized to the extreme. You know, a Dutch college student working on a PhD pinged me a couple of months ago and I connected them and, you know, sure. You know, and they met with Alan Friedman and, you know, when he was in Holland, and now they're involved in one of the big working groups. We'll answer to anybody. It's amazing. It's one of the great shames right now. You know, and this is why I'm asking the younger generation to help us old, you know, folks learn how to communicate better, because, you know, we're all out here.
Hey, let's talk about age. You brought it up a couple of times, and the question from Dan Ritchie, who says hello. He says, tribal knowledge is a real threat to the OT ICS security. The aging workforce in OT engineering, which maybe one of you can sort of define what that's about. We're not talking cybersecurity there. The aging workforce of OT engineering is part of this problem. What do Chris and Patrick think is the best way for organizations to address this challenge?
I guess I'll start. I think the digital natives are going to figure this out.
Well, what's he talking about fundamentally there, though, Patrick?
Well, there's a name for it. We call it gray out. so there's gray out happening.
The average age of someone working in these operational environments is older, not necessarily being backfilled by enough younger, right?
Well, I'm not sure I buy into that, because okay. what we're seeing that's aging out is the workforce that worked in the analog space. And going forward, yeah, there'll still be some analog, but there'll be less of it. And a lot of the things that need like technology level expertise are not going to be analog. They're going to be digital. So the digital natives will have this figured out. It will be commonplace for them.
So there's an opportunity only in the, let's say, relative short term for knowledge gapping, but eventually it writes itself. But there could be people leave who understand how some legacy technology in the brown installation is still there. They leave and maybe newer people don't know how it works, but that will all write itself eventually. So it's an awkward time. Are we in that?
Yeah, we're in that awkward phase. I think so, because we've got a lot of legacy stuff that's just not feasible yet to replace, and it still works. I mean, it was built to run hundreds of years, and you just pull it out, rewire it, and put it back in, and it keeps working. If it's like that, then it will likely continue to be there for the foreseeable future, as long as it'll still continue to do its thing. But like your PLCs, your RTUs, IEDs, FEPs, RDAS, all of your technology style components that are in there, they're all going to become more and more and more and more digital. And in some cases, like we saw with, you used to have five or six different technologies, they're all now jammed into a UTM firewall, next gen stuff that does everything, include a, blow your nose when it's done. So you'll see them all combining these devices, and then there'll be a combined device in a container in a cloud somewhere. But the digital natives will have all these problems solved by then, because if it's going to stay analog, it's going to stay analog. And then therefore people will be trained on it, because if they're not, people die. So it's got a guaranteed training basis for a certain type of your technology or your equipment basis. But outside of that, the rest of it's all going to go digital. So we're just at the phase right now where we're kind of dealing with both.
So I want to read a comment that you guys got. Well said in your intro. I think there's a lot of work to be done, and the ICS OT community needs to grow to solve the problems in ICS OT cybersecurity. However, there also seems to be a number of executives and company leaders that only want to do the minimum, if at all. Maybe risk acceptance or transferring that risk to cyber insurance. I think he's implying that some people think that's the answer. I think Dale previously said that many leaders are willing to take more risks than many of us are comfortable with. What is your perspective and thought on executive perspectives on solving ICS OT cybersecurity?
Yeah, I'll just be perfectly straightforward. It's an executive's job to take risk. That's why they're hired. Let's just be honest about it. That is their job, is to take on as much risk as possible and not break the company. That's their job. So you can't change them and the way they think. That is what they're hired to do. So it's your job to explain to them in business sense why that decision they're about to make is riskier than they should be. It's too much risk for them. So it's a different language, but trying to get executives to somehow become security experts, good luck. I mean, you're wasting your time, to be honest. And if you've done that, fantastic. Wow, I would love to learn what you did. But when I talk to executives and boards, I never say the word security ever, not once. Because the minute you say that, you are now this technical, propeller head that's going to say letters that they don't understand, and they're scared, and this doesn't make any sense. And of course, they're not going to show that, because their ego is like, I already know all this stuff. And, so they have this weird dichotomy where they don't know it, but they have to act like they know it. So you play into the fact that you come to it with business words, business sense. We're trying to minimize downtime. We want to make sure that the business can continue operating in the event of a ransomware attack, these kinds of things. That's something they can recognize. Wow, ransomware, that sucks. We don't want that. We can keep operating. Ooh, that means less downtime. We continue to make money. How much do you need? Let's solve that problem. It's a different way of framing the issue to them. But communicating with executives is an art, and it's not something that most technical people are natively good at. They could certainly learn it, but it's a different language. It's like, someone coming to talk to you about your technical world and they don't know your acronyms.
I'll give you my answer to both questions. It will be all right. One of the things I like about the maturity, again, of OT is you get really, really practical. And as our community, matures and expands and grows, one of the things we have to be very aware of is that management, leadership, people in their 50s and 60s, you know, like normal human beings have a tendency to say kids these days, you know, aren't going to have the skills to do the thing.
Get off my lawn.
And that's happened every, you know, we were those young folks once. We heard it as well, and it's not the case. You know, so in the workforce thing, you know, the key point is enough. You know, Derek asked the question, and we all say this, there's not enough. Maybe there is. I'm pretty sure there is. And I think, you know, if you look forward over the next couple of decades, if you don't think, you know, autonomous, you know, look at Boston Robotics, and you don't think autonomous, you know, little gadgets are going to be out there doing a lot of the hand welding and digging it, you know, anyways, that are the skill set, they're going to be, you know, turned into more hobbyist craft people. It's like building a steam engine. You know, people still do that. They're really good at it. It's just not a common thing anymore. And executives will continue to make the right decisions, right? You know, my 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago now, you know, when I first, having come out of OT and got into cybersecurity and launched a firewall product, immediately was up against the, what can we do for OT? And the answer was nothing for 20 years. And the executives who chose not to put billions of dollars into OT cybersecurity in the 1990s made the correct choice. Because those, if maybe some did decide to do that and they're out of business now, we don't know them anymore because they spent all their money on something that apparently didn't matter. So
let's circle back to S4. There are a bunch of questions and comments coming in, by the way, so we'll get to what we can. But let's circle back and just one person asked, I thought it was a good stimulating question. Anything that surprised you topically or, you know, discussion wise at the conference? And if not, something that you just thought was really particularly impactful?
I don't know. I try not to be surprised by these things. It's kind of what I do, right? You know, so, you know, I was satisfied to see that things were evolving along paths that I would hope they would, you know. You know, threat intelligence, certain things, you know, I'm not surprised, you know, but still haven't gotten to where we thought they would have been earlier. They're taking longer and whatnot, but.
Yeah. I'm not the biggest advocate of threat intelligence for many companies, just because if you're not locking your doors and windows, you don't need a neighborhood watch. I mean, you still got to do the fundamentals, right? I mean, you don't need an alarm system if you're not locking your doors and windows. You definitely don't need a neighborhood watch. So knowing that there are, you know, criminals in your area and you don't care because you're not locking anything, well, so what? I mean, go do the basics first and then worry about that. I mean, that's for a much different state. Not all the companies I know are, you know, patching systems and taking care of the cameras. And,
yeah, there's an analog Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You don't work on, I think the top of the pyramid is like self-actualization when the bottom is like food, shelter.
Yes. Yes. There's two things that I picked up on S4 that I kind of wanted a little more dive, or I think our industry is struggling with, is the cyber insurance topic is one of them, and then metrics. I think that's another one.
Yeah, let's talk metrics, because I've seen this bubble up a lot, you know, and started getting into, and we've had some events around it, quantifying and getting to the point of how we make prioritized decisions, and data and metrics is how we, you know, in my opinion, how we do that to a large degree, because we can't all do all the things that we might do. It is all about knowing what to do next and knowing what's going on. And we have so much data, and we're going to have more data, not less, available. And so how we make use of that, that's all very fascinating stuff. What are your thoughts on that?
I guess I'll start. You want to start, Chris? It's up to you. I started the last one.
Let me give you my thoughts on this one. You know, so I think, you know, this is, you know, when I said this is the last decade of cybersecurity, I said that for two reasons. One, I don't think we're going to continue forever for thousands of years into the future, you know, stumble along for a couple of years and say, oh, you know, situational awareness, threat intelligence, you know, that doesn't exist. We should think through that. Oh, supply chain intelligence, that doesn't exist. So I think we're running out of whole domains that we actually need to you know, discover and start developing anything in. And I think the nature of these things and the whole world and the environment we're living in, you know, not just cyber, not just security, but everything's related, is getting to the point where we have to be able to manage these levels of sophistication. And I can see some of them inside just my own little domain right now in supply chain. If I have to put all these things together, huge volumes of information, huge numbers of attestations about the software that's in an ever increasing, ever dispersed infrastructure that is ever more, you know, critical to everyone's existence. And put those all together in real time with not just SBOMs, but IOCs and everything all at the same time. I have to build technical infrastructures for sharing information and defining trust and acting on trust. And I think those same structures, you know, either in some cases probably are, or at least model the kind of systems we need to continue staying ahead of this advancing, you know, complexity, and not just, you know, not suffer from it, but exploit the, you know, kind of outrageous advantages of having it.
Yes, there's outrageous advantages to it. I think we are bad at communicating our metrics because some people are doing them. They're not sharing what they're doing. So if you've got some metrics that have worked for you, please share that stuff, because it's like everyone's either not doing it or not talking about it, because there's not a lot of extra stuff in our space. But I have a scientific background, actually, by schooling, microbiologist, believe it or not. And in studying biologic systems, one of the things that we were taught as one of the scientific principles, basically, is just start measuring, but measure consistently. And then you'll figure out where it's not working and what to do with it. But the point is, you have to measure. You have to measure consistently. And you have to have the base assumption that you will be changing your metrics over time, because you need to. And then you'll add new metrics, because this should now be two things instead of one thing. But yes, metrics are not as hard as it sounds. It isn't really like some special formula, or if you just did this one metric, you would get all the information you need to make the decisions. You don't know that. So just measure and measure consistently and grow it from there. It's not that hard.
Right. You know, and cybersecurity, you know, cyber insurance is a great example of all this, because, you know, and it was about 10 years ago. Let me start, put it this way. About 10 years ago, I had another contentious topic because it was something I was working on at the time, and it was cyber insurance. And I started saying cyber insurance is going to solve all cybersecurity problems. And again, just to start a good fight and have an argument and so forth. But I think it's literally true. Right. And if you look at, you know, Lloyd's of London, great example. Right. How do you take money and insure plant fiber vessels that are sailing into what may be a flat and or round world, and do that economically, right? They've figured it out. You know, talk about metrics, pulled my coffee, right?
Yeah.
And about 10 years ago, that was a big deal. DHS had CDOG, I forget what it stood for, but it was a group, some SMEs like myself and representatives of the insurance companies talking about it. And I've been watching it all along, and watching application form go from 50 pages to 80 pages, but just adding things to the end, right? You know, that's like, you know, the ship didn't come back, or the ship came back and it's full of, what are those? Spears. Okay, spears. Do you have spears, right? So we're still just coming up with a list, but in the end, Lloyd's of London is going to get 18% of the global cyber insurance market like they do everything else, you know, because that the world isn't changing that. So they will figure out how to continue to get the metrics. So, as you know, who's driving who? Who knows? But we're continuing to get down to the, you know, my point about the systems we're building now allow us to actually have metrics so we can see what we're even doing with information. And Patrick, to your point, we know how this is done. We drew the big picture 50 years ago, right? You know, those amongst us who have been at that long were right, and we're still filling in the gaps. And insurance is one of those inevitable drivers pushing us down that path, because, you know, they're still in business today. You know, the cyber insurance, right, to me, I'll tell you, looks ridiculous to me right now. But if it works, yes. Company, great. And if you're an insurance company, you're making money at it, great. But what it looks like now, what it looks like 5 years from now, are vastly different things.
Well, I take it back to when we were trying to insure buildings for fire. And that was a big problem. And of course, fires, everything was pretty much made out of wood. There were some structures made out of stone, but wood was easier. So they often used wood, and everything would burn. Entire cities would burn. And we have all kinds of historical record of entire cities burning to the ground. What we ended up with over a span of time, after some pretty interesting problems and entire cities burning to the ground, we have things like sprinkler systems and fire extinguishers and fire marshals that come and check the fire extinguishers to make sure they've been, you know, charged at the latest frequencies. And there's little check boxes on them that you can see somebody is auditing this trail. You have fire exits with push bars that are built into every kind of either building code or safety code, everything operational, in order to just build the structure, much less get insurance for the structure. So what insurance did eventually was drive all of those things into these various forms of codification of making it safer so that, do we have fires? Yes. Yeah, we still do have fires. Do they kill people? Yes, they still kill people. Do they burn entire cities to the ground? No. It's no longer catastrophic at scale. It's more local and focused. So it is it's managing the unmanageable risk in a way that eventually becomes manageable.
Yeah, and honestly, I say a lot of optimistic, perhaps Pollyanna sort of things, but very clearly, we're still in the Chicago fire era, right? Yes. You know, things that we're concerned about, they matter if we fix them a year earlier or later. But we're not, this is not a perpetual churn. You know, these systems will develop the maturity they need, and it's hopeful along the way. But there's a lot of work to be done right now, and we'd like to actually not have any cities burn.
So here's a specific question in a kind of a specific area that I thought would be fun. It came in earlier, and I've been sort of sitting on it. It's from Seth Milling Furgot. I hope I got the last name right. He said, speaking of cars, what are your thoughts on Ford applying for a patent on a car that can repossess itself? Does this concern your regards to IoT?
Yeah, I read that in the news. I had a whole wave of different feelings go over me on that one. First, I thought, well, how cool is that? I mean, someone came up with a really interesting idea. At the same time, I saw enormous potential for abuse. So I'm on the fence. These things are going to happen. I mean, it's not like you're going to be able to stop it. Innovation like this is a guarantee. In fact, if you tell people to stop innovating, they'll innovate faster and more because you told them not to. So I would say we will find out the ways that will be exploited in unique and creative and unfortunate situations, and then it will get fixed.
Yeah, and I wouldn't see it as a security concern. You know, it's like, could someone hack that and make, erroneously repo a car? Yeah, probably, sure. But it'll probably happen accidentally more often anyways because of an error in the system and data entry and so forth. And I'm sure we'll see lots of fascinating stories about that. But again, I think that, to the issue over time, as we know, well, let me be clear. We don't quite know yet, but I think that car ownership is a pain, and it's, knowing how many miles I have on the tires and changing, unless it's an interest car, something I actually like, I, for one, would like to get into the world where I don't know the bloody thing in the first place, automated Uber or whatever. I think that's where we're generally going over time. Then again, when I think OT, in IT, you can get really frenetic and talk about what we're going to do in the next 90 days. But in OT, we really need to think about, where is all this going? So I think over the next 10 or 20 years, the whole nature of cars is likely to alter in interesting ways.
The discussion you guys are having about cyber insurance has spawned a whole bunch of questions and comments. They're not all questions. And so I'll just sort of throw a few things out there because it's obviously on people's mind. It's something you're sort of wrestling with or trying to understand. And so one person points out, you got to read carefully the clause written in all little characters. That's an interesting, all the T's and C's. And so far, that's been problematic. What's covered? What's not covered? What do you find you're not covered because you didn't do some things that you were required to do and suddenly what you thought was covered isn't covered? That is something you could touch on. One person saying, I think this is responding to a comment that one of you just made, cyber insurance isn't ridiculous if you think what you're insuring. For example, if you're a large company with a PII breach, how much do you think it's going to cost you to send out notification letters, the cost to put those notification letters together, the postage, et cetera? I think it's a good example and a great thing to talk about when we're talking about OT. The PII breach is personal identifying information, if anybody here doesn't know it. And that's a traditional IT, or that is a traditional IT breach. Talk about how hard it is to quantify and why even some of the biggest insurance companies in the world are struggling to quantify OT cyber risk versus traditional IT cyber risk.
This gets into one of the reasons that cyber insurance sucks so bad right now is because the potential for really large catastrophic loss is there. So when we look at situations like NotPetya, where you've got a global worm that's going around making problems, or Log4j or something like that, and if this were in some way going to hit, various pieces of OT, and you're talking about multi-million dollar losses to equipment or even large scale problems for chemical release into a city, there's all kinds of really weird and unfortunate, potential for catastrophic loss, like really, really significant, way more than the insurance companies can support kind of loss. So they're worried about going bankrupt trying to insure you. That's a reality, believe it or not. Insurance companies actually do go bankrupt in some cases. So there's reinsurance for them. And even the reinsurance companies are worried about the insurance companies going bankrupt. So they're very hesitant. So what we're seeing is something like what was originally done for the terrorism situation, because that can cause very significant losses financially. There was FATARA and some other mechanisms that were like a federal backstop, where if an insurance company was insuring you against an unbelievably large catastrophic loss well outside their margins, then the federal government would step in with some funds to help the pool so that they wouldn't all go bankrupt. And then therefore, the company at the bottom of the chain who's trying to get the insurance recovery can still survive. Because, everyone's like, oh, dear, the insurance company goes bankrupt. Well, that sucks for them. But what happens is the company being insured now doesn't get any money to fix their thing that they need to fix. So it trickles all the way down. So what you'll see, like in the National Cybersecurity Strategy that just came out, they're talking about doing this for cyber insurance in particular, where there is a federal backstop to help the insurance market and prop it up in the event of some, freaky catastrophic loss situation. Those numbers have to be like really, really big, of course. So we're not just, supporting the insurance market in unrealistic or, detrimental to the consumer methods. But that's part of the reason that they're very scared to offer the insurance, because they know that there is potential for catastrophic loss. And they've already tried the war exceptions and similar things of force majeure, basically things outside of your or their control that caused the problem. So we're seeing some of those court cases play out now, and it's causing ripple effect as well. So as the consumer trying to buy the insurance, it's costing you a very large amount, more than you want to pay. And in some cases, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. You're going to pay more for it than it's worth to just fix the thing yourself. So that's the hard part, is you get to do the extra due diligence now of figuring out where that line is. Is this something you can do yourself? And should you front end it by, some better security practices? There are ways to do, like minimizing the impact of ransomware in similar situations. So but that's not easy. It's a difficult financial discussion. And it's not a security discussion. It's a dollars discussion.
And to be clear, I don't know exactly, I'm not plugged into the whole cyber insurance topic right now for the last several years, right? But, everything you just said, Patrick, lines up, because one of the things I was going to share was, it was like 10 years ago, I guess, and the opportunity to have a one-on-one with one of the Lloyd's principals. I forget, there's a name for these folks, right? The individuals really behind this. And I asked him to validate something I've been using as an analogy I've been using to explain the topic at the time to folks. Well, I said, so what I've been telling people is that for you folks right now, cyber insurance is like 3 a.m. drunk Saturday night off strip Las Vegas betting, right? Just throwing things at it for that. This is not planned, right? You're just here and you're doing things. But as this grows to a certain point, this is not going to need to be in the casinos on this strip. In a much more controlled environment, and I said, is that a ridiculously oversimplified analogy or not? I said, no, that's literally about right. So here we are 10 years later. And again, these things go play out over a long period of time. And one of the things you just said, one of the functions of insurance is not to insure things, is to say, okay, we'll insure that. It'll cost more than your annual revenue. Or you can fix these things and it'll cost you $10. Yeah. Right. So they're going through the process of figuring out what that level is. Right. And individual insurers could get wiped out, public sector backdrops will probably be in place, but the system will remain and those same drivers will exist, and the successful insurance companies will navigate that to the point where when we actually really can have metrics, which we can't yet. I'd kind of be fascinated to see exactly what is the, how do you issue cyber insurance right now? I almost wouldn't if it was me, right?
Yeah. And I'm starting to see where cyber insurance companies, instead of sending you that, 150 page questionnaire, because it's got really stupid questions in it. And I mean, it's got stuff like, do you have MFA? I was like, OK, yes, on one thing, but it's not the important thing. So that answer is meaningless in many ways.
And if you check yes on a list, all the yeses on a list like that, no, I'm not insuring you for sure, because you can't put it doing all the things doesn't reduce my risk. Right.
No, so I'm starting to see things like, the little plug-in thing you put in your car for Progressive, right? That tells Progressive your driving habits, this kind of thing. Horrible privacy invasion, but you get cheaper insurance, right?
So and we do it with our phones all the time anyways, because it gives us traffic information.
Right, yes, yes. We're doing this already in so many different ways. But what I'm seeing is they're looking at some of the insurance companies now. Instead of giving you that questionnaire, they're asking you some of the basic fundamentals, like, you know, building codes. Do you have a sprinkler system? Do you have fire extinguishers? Are you at least doing some of the basic things? And then from there, if you want additional decreases in your insurance, then they'll grab some metrics from like an MDR, XDR, or MSSP aggregator of some of the standard security data from your company in that quasi-anonymous way, so that they're not just getting a direct pipe off of your external internet feed, like your external proxy or something, or your external firewall, but they get enough data to make them feel comfortable that they can insure you to certain levels that you've done, you're continuously doing the good stuff versus, you know, doing everything up front. So the insurance questionnaire, you sign all, you check all the boxes as yes, and you know then you're not actually doing those in practice. You're just doing this to show them. Once you can prove to them that this is being done continuously, then the insurance numbers that they're talking about will go significantly down. So it is maturing in a lot of different ways, and we're seeing that it's not, you know, drunk 3 a.m. Vegas betting. It's actually getting to they're not looking at just any metrics. They're actually looking at some standardized, normalized, known good practices, that kind of thing. So we're getting there. I think one of the bigger challenges I've got is one of the soapboxes I get on a regular basis is we don't have enough like breach information. So like the classic example is if I smoke and drink and never exercise and eat cheeseburgers and bacon every day, I'm probably going to die by 40. We know this because we have thousands of years of actuarial health data. It's right. We know what is healthier and what's not healthier. We don't have a lot of what's working and what's not working in the breach space. So I think that's a challenge as well.
Let's spin the prize wheel for everybody who's answered questions and go back and do some Q&A. Sure. I think let's try to do that now. I think they're also, we'll do that. And then I want to touch on this while that's being set up. There may be some clarification needed here. We've got one of our participants today, getting the feeling that what you guys are saying. And having said that, how do you think the public interest survive if they don't purchase cyber insurance? They have a very large breach. Neither one of you are saying don't buy cyber insurance. And so I think if you can circle back, I think what we're trying to talk about how it's challenging today. I don't think either of you would say don't buy it. It's a category of risk mitigation, but it isn't it isn't a catch-all.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
Identify, prioritize, and quantify risk and rinse and repeat. All the time. You know, sometimes you can transfer risk with insurance and sometimes you can't. So,
all right, we got our first winner, Bill L. I think I know who that is. Oh, that's third place. So congratulations, Bill. I'll see you, I think, in 2 weeks if I know who that L is. Let's see who's up next. Thanks for everybody. This is basically people who have not won recently. There were a lot more questions and dialogue today. Probably four times as many as the names here, but we try to every now and then. Valerie P. You were very active today. Awesome to see that. We try to limit the winners to once a quarter or whatever. So we've eliminated some of you that are frequent question askers, which we really appreciate that you're here. But let's spread the love a little. And Colette K, also someone very coming in quite a bit today as well. So super cool to see that. And hopefully the dialogue is proving useful. All right.
Yeah.
So then back to where we were. I think that's important. So finish your thought there on, we're not saying no to cyber insurance, but just that it's thorny a little bit right now.
Yeah, no, I'm saying you should probably have cyber insurance for some things. Definitely. Just know what things make the most sense for you. It's not do nothing and then hope cyber insurance is going to solve your problem, because A, you won't get insurance because they'll ask you questions you can't answer well. And in the event that something does happen and they come ask and say, well, you know, you said you had sprinklers and your building burned down. Clearly you didn't have sprinklers, and then they won't process your claim. So you have to know where that's going to work for you. So my point is, it's not easy. It's very challenging to get the right balance and the right mix and the right policy. So it's not don't do it. It's do it, but know that it's not an easy thing to do, and it should be done right and with care.
Well, you know, my answer actually is try to get cyber insurance regardless. You know, and you may decide you don't need it or whatnot, but I think as a general truism, if you want to find out things and help you be more secure, try to get some cyber insurance. You know, maybe they ask you questions, you go, oh, okay, I haven't thought of that. Who knows?
So we've got a poll up about attending conferences. There was a theme earlier that either Chris or Patrick is talking about advocating for find a way to go to some of these conferences. There are the OTICS specific cybersecurity conferences. Obviously, we've talked about S4 as being one of them. But then there are also larger conferences that have sections or subcomponents, including some of the largest cybersecurity conferences you can go to, DEF CON and in Las Vegas and RSA. There's ICS OT parts of those conferences, and so you can find some of the you know industry leaders are there. ICS OT cybersecurity, you know, really knowledgeable people are there as part of the overall larger conferences, and you can have some of these focused conversations in this space if this is what you're interested in. So I'm going to share this real quick. We can see, you know, what we have there. So yeah, about 2/3 going to different levels of participation and about a third not. So cool.
And the flip side of that, of course, is going to the non-OT, you know, being the OT cybersecurity person at a plumbing convention and so forth. You know, there's a lot to be gained. And again, you know, we've talked a lot of generational stuff. You know, if you're young and full of vinegar and know a few things and you're working in it, you know, picking up on some of these things and taking it outside of this little bubble into the much larger bubble of events and conferences and people and structures who need your help.
Yeah, be the advocate.
Okay, let's see what else we got here. Oh, one person notes when you were talking about insurance. Take a look at the lost property data sheets for ICS from FM Global. This is a baseline for ICS. And he notes, he said, I'm not involved or working for FM Global. So he just putting out there as a potential resource.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I've seen a bunch of different models. There's some interesting new quantification tools that are popping up now that are like real quant, not, you know, somebody with a spreadsheet that takes your answer and says, three, you know, but real quant, which is better. Like some of them can take like live operational telemetry and turn it into quantification, which is really cool.
Okay, so let's see. Anything else you want to? There are more questions, but just tying back again to something from the conference that you thought was worth commenting on. Anything from your trip summary blog article?
Yeah, I did want to give kudos to Dale for having the Women in ICS component to it. And it's a challenging subject because it's a problem. It's a terrible problem. It needs to change. Just get that out there up front. And it's International Women's Day, so go women. But what's sticky for me is it shouldn't need to be a specialty item. It should just be normalized. It should just be the thing where there's women and everybody, people from all races and colors and walks of life and countries. And it doesn't matter, sex or non-sex. We need all of you to do this because I'm tired and I'm old. And I need you to replace me with your awesome new ideas that I haven't thought of because I haven't fixed it yet and I need you to help. So we need all of you to do this. And though I welcomed the specialty item and it was awesome to have so many women there and 100 of them got free tickets, it's really cool of Dale to do that by all means. So definite kudos. But man, let's just make this normal.
Well, riffing on that particular theme, because I couldn't agree more. And again, you know, we need to understand that we're building things and changing things that take a long, long time, you know, some of which we may not live to see, you know, which is fine, right? You know, that's okay. And everything we're doing with cyber and infrastructure and, you know, the entire global changes in the last 100 years, right? You know, where do you start? You know, where does it go in the next 100 years? What about 200? What about beyond, you know, our individual horizon? And it can be frustrating whether you're trying to, you know, work through getting cyber insurers to change faster. Well, it's not going to happen in 3 months. It's not going to happen in 3 years. It may not happen in 30, right? And, you know, the workforce issues we have on every level, you know, as you say, just, you know, it sounds, you know, you want to date ourselves, you know, talk about this, you know, just men and women. You know, just recognizing that women as an entire class of half the, you know, the population are also involved in this. You know, that's a very 50-something thing to say. You know, the world is fractal, and it takes a long time to work through. But I'm quite confident that it does because it's more efficient and effective. And it's amazing how that drives, just like cyber insurance, you know, with issues of whether we're trying to get truth and honesty and information sharing so that we can secure, do our job securing structures, or, you know, have job opportunities and career opportunities and so forth, open sunlight is a great disinfectant, right? It's just cheaper, more efficient, more effective to involve everybody. But it takes a long, long time to rebuild entire structures of everything.
So this was funny how these topics are bubbling up today. And then I can go back and look at questions people are asking. And much earlier today, one participant asked, how do you feel diversity, equality, and inclusivity are being implemented in OT? And you're obviously touching on women. That's an interesting question based on what you were just talking about.
We're not going backwards, right? You know, but again, these are long demographic, you know, you had to speak about everything. And we talked about the aging workforce issue, you know, which opens up trade school issues and, you know, engineering as a skill. And if we get into that context, the generation that's aging out now, we're, you know, taught in pretty well exclusively male, you know, white male environments in many cases, right? You know, and that doesn't change until you generationally, you know, train people and end up having them have 30 years of experience, right? So, but it's, you know, I challenge any company or country, if you want to go monoculture by any definition, have at it, right? You know, you'll be outcompeted, you know, flat out.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, diversity is the only way you actually win, and that's not just my biology speaking. But I think that it's different than just saying, yeah, we're for it, and hey, go diversity. Then it does take some level of action by you to do something to change the way the status quo is. I'm on a lot of conference CFP review boards, and we are intentionally and actively trying to get more people of color and more women as presenters and panelists, just because not only do we need their ideas, but others need to see that this is normal, this is right. So by all means. Please.
That's the kind of maturity we need. I keep harping on, you know, so this is becoming, you know, over still quite a few decades, still coming along, become a critical issue for humanity.
Yes. Right?
You know, so we need to get past, you know, the, you know, arguments. And to your point, you know, what I said just before may have sounded sort of, you know, lazy affair, but no, I mean, understand that things are going and then act, work. Let people, Mr. Rogers, in my lifetime, the things Mr. Rogers did as an individual with one TV show that let millions of kids know that, oh, I could be that. You know, yeah. That's a lot of what we're doing right now. We can't fix today, but we can set things up so that, you know, tomorrow and 10 years from now and 20 years from now fixes itself.
So here's a question from earlier that I want to tie back to because it was a band about, you know, conferences in general. And so this is Gaurav Srivastava, and he says, do you think these conferences are dominated too much by vendors? And maybe we should invite more asset owners free of cost. I was lucky to meet and talk with both of you, and I was also a first timer. So he must have met you both at S4.
Yeah. In short, yes. Second part of that is it's an inevitability in as much as this is the way these things go in the current era. You know, so maybe we can change that. But, you know, you look at, you know, if you can manage to get a little conference going and people showing up at all and someone to cover the cost of it, hallelujah. You know, you did an amazing thing. You keep that going over a number of years and it grows and it's on a topic that, you know, is becoming more prominent. And, you know, vendors find out that by sponsoring you, they can get more customers and make more money. It's hard to avoid this, which then, you know, may drive away the asset owners. And getting asset owners, you know, the budget, the ability, and agreeing to come out at all is, again, something I think that, you know, Derek, you and this forum have done a great job with. Most of the industry has not.
Yeah, it's a necessary evil of a conference. I mean, someone's got to pay for it. I mean, unless you want to have, like, you know, go get your own lunch and you've got, you know, maybe folding chairs on a lawn somewhere. But if you want a nice hotel and you want a good lunch, it's going to be vendors pay for that. And they want airtime as a result.
Or it's a $10,000 ticket to the conference. Yeah.
Yes. So I have seen some conferences, actually more are doing this now, where if you sign up as your company and you're not a vendor, you're an asset owner, then your ticket is discounted. So there are some conferences that are doing that to draw more asset owners. And the vendors obviously are limited in numbers of tickets that they can buy, that kind of thing. So they only typically, if they can only send like three or four people, they always send a salesperson because they always have to send a salesperson. That's just, that has to happen. But they'll often send some of their SMEs or their smart people to walk around and showcase their, you know, kind of thought leadership, this stuff, their sauce, by having their smart people roaming around the audience too. So, or even as speakers in some cases. But what I do like about the trend I'm seeing, and not only are asset owners getting discounts, but the forbidding sales pitches from vendors is a big one. So it's not just that they're a vendor. I mean, because their vendors can have some brilliant people on staff. I mean, some of our best and brightest are on vendor staff. So they probably have something profoundly interesting to share with you. And they just happen to have the vendor brand on. They should share that profoundly interesting thing that helps everybody in the industry, possibly even their competitors, in a way that's useful for everyone at the conference versus the sales pitch. So that's a trend I'm also seeing that is good. But if the vendor gets up there and just does a solid sales pitch, you know, I understand your frustration. I mean, that's something that most people just want to, you know, take time to do a demo or something like that. But it's a necessary evil. But I'm starting to see some trends that are at least less frustrating.
Yeah. And I would go, I agree with you. I would go so far as to say it's a necessary synergy, you know, versus evil in that we, you know, I look at all these things as puzzle pieces, and providers are puzzle pieces. And so we certainly have taken the tack from the very first meeting 8 years ago with our association of don't sell. At that time I had something to sell. And I said in the first meeting, this will go downhill quickly if we sell. So if you want to talk about what I do, I'm glad to talk to you about it. Of course I would love to. But that's not what we're, you know, here for. So don't lead with that. Talk about stuff we can all benefit from. And we've tried to maintain that everywhere. It's the same balancing point. And I'm very grateful to all of our, you know, all of our sponsoring partners. And they've been amazing. And it's a growing group of people doing a lot of stuff with us. But I think they've 99% of the time, they really have stayed on that side of the fence, which is educating and teaching. And yeah, every now and then a few, you know, leaking in a few extra jabs at, you know, our opportunity mentions. But I think it's been few and far between.
Well, I think it's another example of the maturity level kind of thing. And S4 and RSA are good examples. RSA is bigger and older. S4 is, you know, smaller. And, you know, OT is more emergent, you know, and newer than IT. But, you know, so we're still on all, we're all together on this path. But we need to, if we find yourself repeating the same problem over and over again, you should probably just fix it or recognize it. Right. You know, so we all talk about this all the time. So let's just figure out the thing and build it in. You know, my ticket to S4 last year was paid for by my employer because they saw commercial value in me being there. And this year we sponsored. Now I would have got a free ticket this year because I gave a talk separate from, you know, but the reality is that people are paying for this. And I want to throw in there, not being an event organizer, I've had these conversations in the past, but I think, you know, in a lot of asset owners are free and what the heck pay for their flights. I don't know, you know, but that's up to the people who are trying to make a commercial reality of an event. Work, but I think there's a lot of tools that could be used to change that problem, you know, today.
Yeah. So there were some questions and comments today about cloud sprinkled throughout today, and you guys were talking about it earlier, but I think this one sort of is worded right. And going back to an earlier point, it's all just T now, technology, as I think, Chris, you were saying, or maybe that was Patrick. I'm not sure who mentioned that, but and the following statement, all of this will be in the cloud when we get past the notion that ICF, when will we get past the notion that ICF pen testing has to be a separate category? After all, real world attacks will just be attacks, and ICF target attacks will happen.
Is now too late, too early? That'd be nice. You know, it's you know, I mentioned, to be clear, you know, my work in Columbia is where the public entity is all public, so I can talk about that. But, you know, the fascinating lesson I took out of that is you look out 25 years at a national scale, for example, you're going to have a national infrastructure that makes you competitive with any first world country on earth and afford to do it. Or you can build the same thing for more than, you know, following traditional means, for more than your GDP. You know, how much of a driver is that? Right. And a big part of that is cloud OT, except the fact that you're not going to buy everything and install it by hand in 25 years.
Yeah. And I get the point where attackers, they'll do what they're going to do. If they're going to take your system down or harm your system, they're going to do that. But doing that intentionally with unknown potential consequences can be extremely costly for an organization. So what, you know,
It's one big
ICS thing. Yes. On a native live system, still not recommended.
No.
There's just too many problems that can come with that, including like people dying. So,
well, that's scanning. Like, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
Scanning brings down a lot of these systems today. Yeah. So
it does. It does. So, I mean, with the more mature people in this space that are doing this right, doing this well, they've modeled their systems. They've got digital twins. They've got labs. They've got a bunch of equipment in places. They even have little, like real live physical mock-ups, like an actual turbine or a pump, something that they can test with and they can, you know, try technology out. I mean, honestly, the best place to do this stuff is in FAT and SAT if you're lucky, right? So, but if you don't have that, build a lab. And if you don't have that, damn, be careful.
Just well, thanks for that, because my point, you know, was a little bit, yeah. So my point is, it's all, yeah, people are obsessed with this idea that I have this one version of it and I, what, pen test that? No, it's all blurred across the landscape. Pen test something else.
Yeah. And honestly, pen testing ICS, you're going to get in. Just, okay.
Yeah.
You guarantee there's some of it's not patched. Some of it, I guarantee, has weaknesses in all of the different OT devices. I mean, they're all.
And respect to all the pen testers in the world, you're doing a lot of great work and so forth, but we know the cliche remains true. If you give me X dollars, I will find X problems pen testing. You give me 2X, I'll find 2X.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no end to that as such. So it's a tool for helping executives understand the concepts and costs of doing things. And you find some weaknesses you might fix.
I think that comment is, and we're going to wrap up here. I think that comment is almost like the insurance as well. You didn't just say, don't do pen testing. You said, do it, but have context around it. That's true. I mean, we could peel apart a bunch of these onion layers and say, we're not saying don't do this thing. It's just that it's not, check, that's done, or that is a panacea that covered all of this. Probably not. And
well, don't do all of them, because that's a red. If you say, oh, we do everything, I know you're lying. You know, because if you're doing it right, you wouldn't do everything. But you're doing some of them, but they had to be in context.
Yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, earlier when we were talking about prioritization or whatever, I think one participant was saying, isn't locking the doors, you know, not one of the basics? It is. I think the comment that one of you was making was saying, if the doors aren't locked, you know, don't worry about some sort of sophisticated threat. It was threat intelligence, because you better focus on locking the front doors. And so I think that might have been misconstrued.
Okay. Yeah. The same thing with pen testing. If you're not locking the doors and windows, you don't need a pen test.
Right.
Because you may find out that it's open.
Right.
You may do any of these things, so you have to understand.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. Okay. So a question was asked very early on, but I saved it to last. You'll see why. Looking forward, what would you foresee as the big themes of S4.24? So now you have to predict the future. Go.
OT cloud.
OT in the cloud. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't gonna pull that one up, but I didn't know what I was gonna say. But I think I agree, right? Yeah. So I think, you know, supply chain. So SBOM is going to be the big thing, you know, this year at conferences. Supply chain intelligence, writ large, over the next several years gets big. But I think S4, yeah, timing for, because you're right. I've just noticed this myself. It seems in the last year, the OT cloud conversation has changed fundamentally, and it hadn't changed in decades. So I think that this S4 next year is probably right timing to, yeah.
I think it's going to be that. And I think there will be a fair mix of the newer forms of risk management that bleed into cyber insurance, because there's a lot of commingling of those same topics. So something in that kind of merged cloud of space as well. That would be my guess.
It'll probably take several years to roll out. But I think, you know, maybe for my part, I might be trying to, you know, inflect S4 next year. Into the combinations of, if the topic's OT cloud, then how do we take all these things like supply chain intelligence and threat intelligence and allow you to do OT cloud? Because, you know, the arguments against kind of anything are usually right in their context. But you can do OT cloud if you have all these things.
Yes. Yes. Or start in these areas. Don't. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. We are at the 90-minute mark. There were things we didn't get to, per usual, and you guys, I think, touched on a lot of important topics, and some people, you know, commented they found it quite useful. So thank you both for not only today, but all the stuff you do in service of the industry. You guys are both great examples of people who have things to sell and do zillions of things not fronting that, but just trying to help people and help raise up the common denominator. So I and the CSA team and the CSA community, thank you for that and for being fellows and contributing extra to the CSA efforts for all of that. Thank you.
Happy to help. Thanks for having us. Thank Great you, questions. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Take care. Be well, everybody. You can reach out to both of these gentlemen on LinkedIn, things like that. They're open to that. Here's my contact information. If we're not connected on LinkedIn, you can feel free to make that request. Just talk about how we met today, quote unquote. And so I'll have some context of where we intersected our professional journeys. And if we can be of service at CSA, you know, reach out, please. Input@CSA.org reaches the entire team. And then dharp@CSA.org reaches me. And we'll do what we can. We do have rising numbers and a small team, so we do our best. Please forgive us for any omissions on our part, but we do want to help y'all. Take care. Be well.